Welcome to Music from the Tower, highlighting the beauty of sacred and classical music. We come to you from the Tower of Hope on the magnificent campus of Christ Cathedral in Garden Grove, California. Now, here's your host, John Romeri.
And this is John Romeri, your host, and you are listening to Music from the Tower. This program is about sacred and classical music, and today's guest is the personification of both those idioms. She is soprano Mary Wilson. Mary, welcome.
Thank you, John, so much.
It is so good to have you on the show. Mary is here in Southern California performing with our Pacific Symphony and with our symphony chorus, our wonderful John Alexander and Carl St. Clair. We'll talk a lot more about that later in the program. But I just want to, Mary's one of those guests that I could just read the accolades from every newspaper in the country, and there wouldn't be time for Mary to talk. Listen to these things. A shining soprano, Mary Wilson, a gift from the gods, if I've ever heard one. Her singing was exquisite, says the San Francisco Classical Voice. Mary, how's that make you feel?
Pressure. No.
Wow. It's absolutely true. I can tell you from firsthand, and later we'll talk about that too. I've known Mary for a long, long time when she was a young artist for the Bach Society of St. Louis.
We are young.
We have so much to talk about. Here's another quote from the Philadelphia Inquirer. Now, I was a cathedral organist for 5 years in Philadelphia, and those reviewers hate everybody, but apparently not Mary Wilson. The discovery was Mary Wilson, a fine lyric soprano with focus, lustrous tone, and sterling enunciation. Way to enunciate, Mary.
Why, thank you.
Thank you. Our radio show is home. Viewers are excited to hear that diction. It just goes on and on. Every single review is just, I love this one the best. She is a bright soprano and seems to know no terrors. What does that mean, Mary?
Smart enough to know that this is hard.
She knows no terrors, wrapping herself seductively around every phrase. I love that. And that was from the Dallas Morning News. This is Mary Wilson, my friends, and she is one of the great sopranos of our time. And she's right here with us on Music from the Tower. Mary, it's just great to have you. Thank you so much for being with us.
Really, John, this is so fun. Thank you.
It's just fun for us to be together.
Yes.
I hope you can feel the excitement of just the two of us being back together again after a long, long time. But Mary, I want to tell the story of little Mary Wilson, you know, how you came to be this great, so famous singer. I think it's always inspiring to our viewers, to the young artists out there, to the young singers of our time, what it's like, how you came to be Mary Wilson superstar. Tell us a little bit about your background. Did you come from a musical family?
I did, actually. My mother is a piano teacher and my father is a choir director, and they were both the choir director and organist at the church that I grew up in Minnesota. So the joke was, really, I would lay on the living room floor and I knew my music notes before I knew my alphabet, pretty much. My mother was insistent that I would be a piano player. And I thought I would be a pianist my whole life, but that's
really?
Another. Yeah, I really
did.
So that
was the goal.
That was the goal.
You were going to be a pianist.
I was going to be a pianist. And, you know, I sang in the church choir. I sang in the school choir. I sang in the musicals. You know, and you go through that phase where everybody wants to be on Broadway. Of course you want to be on Broadway, you know. You don't know what opera is. You don't know any of this. And yeah, so I was your typical cheerleading blonde nightmare in high school, wanting to be a singer, you know. And I wanted
fabulous.
To sing in a choir. So I decided to go to St. Olaf Choir, or St. Olaf College, home of the famous St. Olaf Choir, because
yes,
I wanted to sing
course.
In the choir.
And it was right there in Minnesota.
It was 8 miles from my house.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. One of the great choir schools of our country, really.
It was amazing. And I got to sing for both Dr. Kenneth Jennings and Dr. Armstrong. So I was there for the transition.
Wow. Okay.
And it was so exciting, really exciting. I was Dr. Armstrong's first first soprano section soloist and section leader. So it was a thrill. Well, and we're good friends to this day.
Certainly one of the great conductors of our time.
Yeah.
He was, you know, I'm so old, I knew F. Malleus Chris Johnson.
As we all genuflect.
Yeah, exactly. So did you do a degree work there?
I did. I got my undergraduate, I got a Bachelor of Music degree in vocal performance at St. Olaf College.
So what happened to pianist Mary Wilson?
Well, I decided I'm a little too social to sit in a room for 6 hours a day by myself. I wanted to go to the soccer game, and I wanted to have friends, and I'm not good alone.
Don't listen to that budding pianist of Southern California.
Right, it's true, it's true.
Do not listen to this woman. All right, so now you've got a bachelor's of vocal performance. Where does Mary Wilson go from there?
Well, that's the question, and so I decided to apply to all these graduate schools where I didn't think I'd get in. Oops. So I got into all these amazing schools, and I thought, uh-oh, now I have to go to graduate school. And I thought, I'll go to the one that's the least scary. So, you know, I didn't really want to go to New York. And so I decided to go to the New England Conservatory in Boston.
Wow.
And I was
wonderful.
21 years old, living in Boston by myself. It was a little scary. And my voice, you know, I want to be an opera singer. And I have a tiny little, bright little voice. And people didn't know
with
what
no
to do.
Terror. Remember,
well, evidently, no terror. But people didn't know what to do with me, and I didn't know what I was doing. And at 21 years old, you don't know up from down. And so I quit after a year and moved home and dyed my hair purple. And it was a very happy time.
Okay. Now we have to ask the opera stars in Southern California to stop listening.
Right. Sorry. I tell you, I'm just up and down.
Well, that's exciting, though.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, for any of us, it's fun to just turn the page and see what's next.
Yeah.
That's kind of the way I've lived my life. That's how I found my way to Southern California and Christ Cathedral, was by just turning the page. And there was the next opportunity for me.
It's
so
amazing.
There you are, all purple haired and in Minneapolis.
In my parents' basement.
Back in your parents' basement, like every good opera singer lands. And now what's going on?
Well, I've decided that this is my life now. So I will sing in the choirs. I will sing at church. I did a season at the Minnesota Opera in the chorus. I said, okay, here's my life. And I was working as a paralegal and found the Bach Society of Minnesota. And where I saw this handsome tenor, very tall tenor, and we fell in love and got married.
Could this be our Todd Wilson?
It could be our Todd Wilson. Yes, it could. And so we met in Minnesota, and he was living there on a whim. Again, one of these funny left turns in life. He helped a friend move to Minneapolis to go to law school, and he wasn't going to renew his teaching contract. So his friend Ted said, well, why don't you just move here? And my husband went, okay. So he moved to Minneapolis. On a whim.
So was he singing in the opera as well?
No, he wasn't. He was just doing the choir work and trying to find what he wanted to do with his life as well. So he was going to radio school and working as a bellman and worked at a pizza place and worked as just all sorts of odd jobs, both of us. We were working.
And now today he's one of the fine choral conductors in the U.S.
He is.
So here you are, these two little lovebirds in Minneapolis. And then what happens?
Well, I was working in a law office and he wasn't really happy. And we decided, let's make a change. So we had been married 1 year, and we packed up our little Honda Civic hatchback.
Oh, I love
and
it.
Why not, right? And we drove to St. Louis on a whim. Let's move to a new town. And neither one of us had jobs, and we moved to St. Louis.
Wow. Well, that was a lucky turn for me, because I was the organist at the cathedral. I was there 18 years of my career, and entered the genre Mary Wilson story.
Yay.
And so we are now together in the same town. And eventually we begin to make music together.
Mm-hmm.
So now that you're in St. Louis, did you immediately begin to sing all over the place?
Oh, no. I was still working in law offices, and Todd was now working at a golf course as an assistant superintendent. I know more about grass than you ever would think possible.
Oh, my gosh.
And we were both staff singers at the cathedral downtown, Christ Church Cathedral, in downtown St. Louis with Pat Partridge.
One of the dear, dear musicians
of that city. Pat.
Yes, and he's still at the cathedral.
Still there. Amazing.
It gives me hope that I can continue on. Pat is just one of the most consummate musicians that St. Louis has. And so you must have been making great music.
We were making great music.
And you and Todd were both staff singers
We were both there together, which is also amazing. What a luxury that we get to go together.
Wow.
And I was working as a paralegal, and like you do on a Sunday morning at 8 a.m., you sing some small solo that you don't think anything about it. And after church, a funny man came up to me and said, "Wow, it's such a pretty voice, and you should go to school." And I'm going, "Who are you?" Little, you know, red flags.
Oh, dear.
Little dubious. And the next morning, I'm getting ready to go to my law office, and basically a courier shows up with an offer to go to Washington University to get a master's in voice. And turns out that man was John Stewart, who became my voice teacher, who was the head of the music of the voice department there, and became a mentor and a friend and totally changed the course of my life.
Well, thank you, John Stewart. The musical world is very, very pleased. John is one of the great voice teachers of our country and is now retired from WashU, living in New York, but was a dear friend of mine, even my gym partner in St. Louis. Well, we're going to find out a lot more about Mary's life. But now, Mary, tell us about a piece that we're going to listen to.
This is from the Handel Gloria, and it's called The Quonium.
And this is Mary Wilson Sings Handel. We'll be right back. This is Music from the Tower. Again, this is your host, John Romeri, and we are talking to one of America's favorite sopranos, Mary Wilson. Mary's in town to perform with our own symphony, with Carl St. Clair, and doing the Mahler. And right now, we're kind of in the middle of Mary's life. She's just moved, purple hair and all, to St. Louis, and she has been discovered by one of the great voice teachers of Washington University there in St. Louis, John Stewart. So John has asked you to come and probably given you a free ride to do study voice. So this is your master's you're doing with John at WashU.
Mm-hmm. So, it was great. You try now to get involved in a new community. We just moved to St. Louis. Everybody was new. We didn't know who the musical family were yet in St. Louis. We're trying to figure that out. So being with John and discovering the Bach Society of St. Louis and Dr. Sparger to discover Dennis was a joy. Dennis had a program called the Young Artist Program, where he gives a soprano, alto, tenor, and bass every season an opportunity to be section leaders and have solos and cover the professional soloists and actually give them performance opportunities with a full orchestra in a professional setting. It's an invaluable experience. And that was one of the first things I did in St. Louis was find Dennis, and that he believed in this young, you know, strange little soprano was amazing.
Well, there are people like Dennis who are just hallmarks of our profession, who not only care about developing their own career, their own musicianship, but really care about that next generation. We've talked with Paul Jacobs on a previous show about mentoring these young folks, and Dennis was a champion in that. He was so great at, and one young artist after the other, and they were all fantastic, and they all went on, almost all, did these great careers. Well, I was privileged to be the organist from time to time with the Bach Society, and just loved working with Dennis. He was a great musician, wasn't he?
He really is.
And just this morning, I called him, hoping he'd be able to be on the show with Mary, and we spoke. He was at a little vacation and wasn't able to be on the show, but the minute I mentioned Mary, as soon as he stopped going, oh, I love her so much. And she was our favorite. She was our absolute favorite. Aww. And isn't that sweet?
That's so sweet.
He is just the best. And he was just devastated not to be able to rant and rave about you on the show. But he really did bring a great chance to all these young artists, giving them a chance to sing one of the great pieces, even premiering a piece by Handel, who had been dead 300 years. Dennis was just one of those great musicians, and I was so privileged to make music with him, and consequently to make music with you.
Yes.
You and I did a CD. I was the organist on that CD, and you had several solos
on
that CD.
One solo piece and a couple pieces solos within
with the choir.
Other pieces with the choir at the St. Louis Cathedral.
Yes, it was recorded in my cathedral in St. Louis, and is a great album, and we'll try to put that up on the website so people can find it, because I'm sure it's still for sale, and we'll make sure that everyone knows where it is. So now that you're the young artist for the Bach Society, and was Todd also your husband also?
He was. He was the tenor young artist, which we laugh at now because, you know, tenor, he says, was 10 years ago.
Oh. Well, we were all once great tenors. I was a fabulous tenor, and now I'm a mediocre baritone. You know, I just, it's tough to get old, you know. It's not for the faint of heart. But it's so cool that you were both in the the Bach Society at that same time.
The great thing about marrying a musician is that he understands what I'm trying to do, and yet he really doesn't have... There's no competition. He doesn't want to do what I'm trying to do. So he's the first one to say, goodbye, go, take the job, bye-bye. And he understands what goes into it. And he's happy when I get these opportunities. He's genuinely... I thank God every day that he's with me, because he's just been the most supportive and the most encouraging person in the last 20 years.
Oh, I'm sure he's so proud of you. I'm sorry he's not here. I know he is. I too am privileged to be, of course, married to a musician.
Right.
Karen and I got our master's in organ performance and sacred music at the same time at the choir college, met in college. And, you know, it's that same thing. You know, we were both wonderful musicians in our own right. She was the one always encouraging me to go out and do the other, do a little more and move on. Mm-hmm. So that's wonderful. So now you are in St. Louis. You're turning into a little young artist superstar there, singing all over, still singing at Christ Church through your whole time
there? Yes. Yes. Our whole time. I consider myself a blue collar grassroots soprano, meaning that I built a career, I think, very unconventionally. I worked in St. Louis, and I became the person that you could trust in St. Louis. If anybody needed a soprano in St. Louis, hopefully they were going to call me. And that started to happen. I started to get a ton of work in St. Louis and really made that my home base, really made that what I could count on and that they could count on me. And slowly but surely, that circle of St. Louis starts to expand, and it starts to become Chicago and Elgin and other little, you know, Sheboygan and those smaller.
Yeah, yeah.
And that pretty soon it starts to get even bigger and wider. And pretty soon it's national. And then you have a manager, and then you have, you know, so it's just, it's very strange how it works that way for me. I had to do it myself. I never had anybody that said, this is what you have to do. And 1, 2, 3, you'll have an agent, and then you'll have a career. And that is just foreign to me.
It's fun how it just develops. So, and I'm sure some of that came from the promotion of being the young artist in the Bach Society, from people hearing you. But, you know, it's interesting that another friend of ours, Christine Brewer, you know, kind of grew up that same way.
Yeah.
She was a local artist. You know, when I knew her, she sang at the Church of St. Michael, St. George. And the next thing you know, I mean, she's opening Covent Gardens in London.
She's,
you know,
amazing.
I mean, she just made this great transformation into a superstar soprano, as have you, my friend.
Well, thanks.
So now you guys move away from St. Louis, and that's where I kind of lost touch with Mary.
Well, one day I pulled a flyer off of the Washington University bulletin board that said Webster Groves Christian Church needed a choir director. And I handed it to my husband, and he said, okay, let's try this. So, you know, we're both, you know, a little older going, what are we going to be when we grow up? I don't really know. So he decided to get that job, and he did. And lo and behold, he found his calling. He's really, really good. So a few years later, we moved to Savannah. for his job, and me being relatively established, I just needed an airport. And so that can, you know, my work is transient. It's a very nomadic existence as a soloist. So
we're going to talk a lot more about that in the next hour.
Yeah, and so we went to Savannah for him and for his career, which was a wonderful place to be. And then 2 years later, he got a call to come to Memphis. And so we moved to Memphis, and that's where we had our son and have been ever since. And we've been building a life in Memphis now.
And so Todd is a choir director at
the
university?
No, actually, he's at Bartlett United Methodist Church in Memphis. It's a really big suburban church in Memphis. And I am now on faculty at the University of Memphis.
Yes.
Yeah.
Making your mark and training your next,
I hope, next generation. I hope. It's fun for me to be on the road and see what's happening and give my students real world, real time experience and advice and what I observe.
Well, I think there's a great advantage to having a teacher who really is a performing artist. Many of us have teachers who teach.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes, you know, you hear that phrase, well, if you can't do, you teach. But it's very cool to have someone who does do and also teaches, because it brings that real world experience.
Yeah.
This is what it's like to stay in a hotel for 4 days kind of by yourself, unless someone drags you on a radio show. And it, what it's like to be, you know, really just working at that level with superb musicians and being the soloist, you know, sort of the cut above all those musicians who's being featured in the program. And that's exactly what's happening to Mary right here in Southern California. This is her second visit to our Pacific Symphony. First, she was here doing the solos on Beethoven 9th last October, was
it? Yes, October 15th, I believe.
Again, here in the summer, this past summer. I wasn't here in Southern California yet for the in-hall performance, but I heard her in an outdoor theater and in our amphitheater, and it was a spectacular performance. But somehow, amid the chaos, I didn't even have a program. And so out comes the soprano, and I've got Bishop Van with me, and I'm sitting there. We've got a whole picnic dinner. Carl St. Clair, the symphony conductor, comes up to get a blessing from our bishop. We're talking to Carl. Out he comes on the stage, and out come these four soloists. And I'm sitting there, and all of a sudden, I hear this voice. And I leaned over to a colleague of mine who was with me, and I said, I know that voice. I didn't have a program, so I snatch it out of the bishop's hand, and there it was, soprano Mary Wilson.
Amazing.
I practically yelled out loud. You know, I couldn't believe it. It was so wonderful, after several years of not seeing each other, to see you on that stage with our own wonderful symphony.
That's amazing.
You were spectacular.
Aww.
So here she is doing the Mahler second now with our symphony this coming weekend. And so it's just great to have you back in Southern California. I want to talk more about Carl and more about the symphony. But now we're going to hear a little more performer Mary Wilson to tell us what we're going to hear.
This is one of my favorites from Handel Messiah. I know that my Redeemer liveth.
And who you're performing with?
This is with the American Box Soloists, and we made a DVD, which was premiered in movie theaters up there, which is hilarious to me. Yeah. This was made at Grace Cathedral, so the DVD is really quite beautiful. You see the musicians and the orchestra and the chorus, and you see the architecture of the cathedral, and
beautiful.
It's really stunning how they did it.
Well, we'll have that link on our website. Again, Mary Wilson, and we will be right back. And you are back. This is John Romero and Music from the Tower and sensational soprano, sensational soprano, Mary Wilson. Mary, it is so much fun to have you here in the studio. I just haven't had this much fun in a long, long time with someone of such stature. This little segment, we're going to talk about opera and oratorio and what those words mean and what it's like to actually sing on the stage in a giant opera or to sing an oratorio with a full orchestra. Mary has performed with just everybody in the world, the L.A. Phil, Philadelphia Orchestra, Cleveland Orchestra, St. Louis Symphony, Cincinnati Symphony, all of these, Detroit, the Master Chorale in L.A., all of these great orchestras all over the country during oratorios, and then also opera companies. She has worked with the Opera Theater St. Louis, the Minnesota Opera, Boston Lyric Opera, and on and on and on, Arizona Opera, Tucson Opera. It doesn't end, child. You are just all over the place. So give us a three-sentence definition of opera. What does opera mean exactly? We all know it's a bunch of singers up there singing at the top of their lungs, especially in their dying oratorio.
Of course.
But, you know, they're about dead, but they've got their high B flat.
They got
still
a big high
out.
Note, and then you die.
Yeah,
yes,
and then
exactly.
You die. So tell us a little bit about opera. What does that mean?
Opera is theater. It's telling a story. And everybody has seen an opera, even if you go, no. If you've seen Les Mis, or if you've seen Rent, or if you've seen some of these modern musical theaters, there's no spoken dialogue. It's all sung. Les Mis especially, something like that. It's all sung. And so I go, ha-ha, you've seen an opera.
Good.
That's the only difference, is that we sing our dialogue instead of speaking our dialogue.
So, and it's fully costumed, fully staged.
Yes, it is all of the arts that come together. And I always say there is nothing better than really great opera. You have the scenic art, you have the visual, you have the lighting, you have the costumes, you have the orchestral, full orchestra playing in the pit, you have full chorus, full soloists, everybody just singing. And when that comes together, it is magical.
And if you're really lucky, you have soprano Mary Wilson in one of the lead roles. If you're really, really, really lucky, I've been already a fan of LA Opera, just living here a year and a half.
Yes.
I go to the performances. They are spectacular. But that means you've got to have every note, every word memorized. You can't write the whole opera on your hand, right?
Nope, can't cheat.
You've got to have it all in your head. How do you do that? Well, I can't memorize a hymn to play in church.
You just start a year or two in advance and start, you know, the older it gets, the little harder it gets to get in your brain, but it still does. You live with it and you make it part of you. The goal is to make it as natural as possible so that I'm talking to you as Juliet or as Gilda or as Susanna, just as naturally as you and I are talking now. That's the goal, is when that character becomes you and you become that character, then the theater happens.
And are there certain roles that you just absolutely adore?
Oh, anything Mozart.
Oh, there you go.
Anything Mozart.
Oh.
Mozart comedies are my favorites.
And how does this go? This is outside of my realm. Does someone call you and say, will you play this role? Do they just know you in a role?
A little bit of both.
That's how
they
take
you? When you're starting out, of course, you have to go to these auditions and you go to these cattle call auditions.
Right.
You hear, like in Broadway, well, it's the same as opera. Again, you go and the opera casting directors listen for 3 days and they hear a singer every 8 minutes for 8 hours for 3 days in a row. And you're lucky if you stick out in their head. And then once you start getting a couple of those, you start to have a reputation of being somebody that they might like. Maybe they came to a show that you were in and saw you do something and go, oh, she'd be good in blah, blah, blah instead.
Right.
So that kind of work begets work, you know?
Yes, it's true.
It's true. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, so there's opera in the nutshell. It's this fully staged thing. Here's somebody memorizing a whole role, a whole 2.5 hours worth of music and dialogue. And have there been a couple of moments where you've flubbed up?
Oh,
do you have a flub that
A funny flub. I was doing a world premiere opera by Philip Glass, and it was actually...
Oh, shoot me now.
I know,
how
it was fabulous.
How do you memorize that?
No, it was fabulous.
Oh,
it was great.
I know. I love his work, but I can't imagine memorizing 3 measures.
Well, the funny thing is it was at an Equity Theater. It was at the Goodman Theater in Chicago. So we didn't get the music ahead of time. You know, opera singers like to have it for months in advance.
Oh, yeah, you gotta live it.
So it was a hybrid of theater and opera together. father. And we showed up on the first day and didn't have our music yet. And so we were all, oh, what's going to happen? And so he was writing it as we were doing it. So we kind of had a little bit of a say in it. And it was very organic, the whole process. So memorizing it was actually very easy. But when you're doing 8 shows a week, it once in a while, you find yourself checking out and you just go, where are we? Where are we? Where are we? And you're like, oh, I've only missed like 2 seconds, you know?
Right. And now I don't scary. Feel so bad playing 8 masses a weekend that sometimes I check out, you know? Is it the holy, holy, or is it the amen?
Where are we?
You know, where are we? Who am I?
I'm going to wear this wig, step off the corner, get hit by a bus, and still be in this wig.
Yeah. Well, it's nice to know that even the superstar musicians have those moments. Now let's turn to oratorio. Here you are singing on the stage, this time sometimes even with a book.
Oh, yes.
Not always, but sometimes. Mm-hmm. And it's a whole different experience, oratorio.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about what an oratorio is. How does it differ?
An oratorio came down when Pope Pius said, no opera during Lent, no opera. Well, the musicians and the chorus and the composers said, no, we still want to have drama. And so we took away the costumes and we took away the lighting and we took away the sets, but we still have these dramatic, sacred texts. So that's how they got around opera in the early, the early days. But oratorio is mostly sacred texts set to full chorus, full orchestra, and soloists. And again, if you find yourself as the narrator, there's nothing better. You have to, whether it is a Christian text, a Hindu text, a Buddhist text, a Muslim text, a Jewish text, at that moment, that's who you are. It's no difference than playing, again, the Duke of Mantua or the Figaro in Barber of Seville. There's no difference. You are that person. And I get really tired of of oratorio being perceived as the ugly stepchild of opera. There is nothing less about this art form. It is as dramatic and as full of passion and as full of life, if not more, because they come from these really historical sacred texts that have been sung and spoken through just generations and generations. And to set them to music and to have all these different composers set them to music, everybody's finding something new in these and finding some element that they want to illuminate through the music. So I think that inherently oratorio can be even more dramatic than opera.
I'm so happy to hear you say that. I've always felt that, but now someone has validated my thinking here. So finally, I'm 100 years old, and I knew finally someone would validate my thinking. But I love oratorios, and I love a person who can really deliver an oratorio well.
Well, the hardest thing is that you don't have anything to hide behind.
Right.
You're
there's
not
no sets.
Right. There's no costume.
There you are.
It's me trying to interpret a text.
And trying to bring us into the scene.
Exactly.
You know, without the luxury of a beautiful painted set or a furniture,
right.
Any of the rest of it.
Right.
But also, do you find that there's a difference singing wise as an oratorio singer versus an opera singer?
Well, there is no character. You know what I mean? I am Mary singing these texts. I am not Susanna. I am not, Le Couleur d'Or. I'm not these characters. I am just myself. And that is a very kind of open, naked experience, you really put yourself on the line to say, I believe, and this is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And that is it's a scary proposition.
And they're dramatic sacred texts.
Very dramatic.
Mm-hmm. It's wonderful to see these things come alive. And it's great, we hope, certainly here at Christ Cathedral, to have many, many oratorio performances right here, because they are sacred texts. And many times they're way more dramatic in a cathedral setting than they are in an opera house setting.
I think so.
In a concert hall setting. Certainly some of the great fun adventures that I've had are doing these wonderful oratorios. But I really think it takes a different kind of an opera singer to do that. Somebody who really, controls their vibrato, thinks more about text, thinks it's a different kind of feel, at least in my book. Mm-hmm. I always get a little annoyed when opera stars come and, they couldn't get a great opera that night, so they're stuck with an oratorio.
Yeah, you sometimes
feel that. And they're just going to blast through it, and not give it the do it.
Right.
I love that it's a little stepchild.
I think so. And I don't think that the preparation can be anything less than what you would do for anything else.
And maybe because you have the book in your hand and you don't have to have it all memorized, it doesn't get the do it deserves.
Perhaps.
Well, anyway, this has been fascinating to hear from the inside story. Who knew it was the popes that created oratorio?
Those rebellious Christians, I tell you.
I know. Always up to something. You can't trust them. Having worked for the church for 40 years, I know that exactly right. But Mary is going to do a little more singing for us now. Now tell us what we're going to do.
Well, this is from an oratorio.
Okay,
from,
I love it.
I know. From Haydn's Lord Nelson Mass, or Mass in Troubled Times. We actually recorded this during the Boston bombing, during the Boston Marathon.
Wow,
we were in recording sessions during this in Boston, about a mile away. So when this came out, it just had extra, you know, Mass of Troubled Times. It had extra weight and extra oomph to it. It was very personal. So this is the Kyrie, the Lord Have Mercy, from the Haydn Lord Nelson.
Beautiful. And we'll be right back. This is Music from the Tower, and our guest is Mary Wilson. Stay tuned. Back. This is John Romero and Music from the Tower. You can tell I'm laughing already. I'm just having the best time with world famous soprano Mary Wilson. Mary, I'd like to wrap up today's show talking about your Southern California performances right here with our wonderful Carl St. Clair. It is such a joy to be a Southern Californian and to be able to enjoy his work all the time. In this season, we had Beethoven, Mrs. Solemnis. John Alexander conducted the C Symphony of Vaughan Williams. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have such great music right here in Orange County. We are so lucky. Our beautiful concert hall.
Yes.
And Carl is really, I would guess, single-handedly responsible for turning our symphony into a world-class symphony and bringing in artists like you to perform. So tell us a little bit about your encounter with Carl and how you came to be chosen as the soloist for his Beethoven.
That was through my agent.
All right. Good for agents.
I know, right? Thank you. It's awesome. He talked to the artistic administration there and Carl and said, you should really hear this soprano that I have. And they took a chance on me 2 years ago. And I think it's okay because now I'm back and I've worked with them a few times since.
Yeah. How does that work? Do they audition you? Do they just take your agent's word for
it? Well, I think they listen to clips and audio.
Yeah.
Yes, of course. And you see singer websites all over and they have audio clips. That really is how we get a lot of jobs.
Is it?
It really is. Prior work, if they know other conductors that we've worked with, they may call their friends.
Yeah, and, of course.
You know,
we all know
small
each other,
world.
Don't we? Yeah. That's how it
very
is.
Very small world.
Yeah.
But it's lovely when somebody new takes a chance on you. And you hope, always hope, that you never let them down, that you do what they're asking and what they're hoping for and what they're looking for, and you just kind of open your mouth and hope it's okay. And Carl is amazing in the fact that the minute he steps onto the podium, the energy that he radiates is infectious, and you can't help but kind of feel like, ooh, you know, and you kind of up your game when he walks on the podium.
You have to give your best, don't
you?
Oh,
it's just, and you want to. You
right.
just want to. He is, he demands excellence, but not in any sort of dictatorial, awful way. It's just this energy. That's the only way I can describe it, is this outward radiating energy. The way he paces a symphony is truly individual and really exciting. Really exciting.
Well, the first time you sang was in the hall.
Oh.
And Segerstrom Center is such a beautiful hall. Of course, as an organist, I love the organ there. I also love how they can adjust the acoustics.
Amazing.
You know, they can open the walls. It's very much like the Meyerson Hall mm-hmm. or the Kimmel Center in Philadelphia, where the hall can be adjusted. You know, some concert halls are so dry.
Yes.
You know, it's frightening as an organist who played with the symphony when the room is so dry. Every little mistake shows. Every little everything shows. It's horrifying.
It's terrible.
But it's terrible. But, you know, so many of these great works, especially oratorios, especially sacred works, were written for great cathedrals with acoustics. Mm-hmm. So when the halls are dry, but our hall, the walls open, and you get this wonderful, lush acoustic in there that really is reminiscent sometimes of a great cathedral.
It's amazing. It's easy. It just encourages easy, full, honest singing. You're not screaming. You're not, you know, doing anything that
Working
you shouldn't.
Working too hard to get it out there.
It's an amazing experience to sing on that stage. It's just, and with no proscenium arch, you feel like you're kind of a part of that. It's almost a thrust-like stage experience, and the fact that you feel like you're almost part of the audience with the wraparound balconies and also the wraparound chorus behind.
Yes.
It's a really, where I get to sit is pretty amazing.
I love the new designs of concert halls. We both kind of cut our teeth in St. Louis.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was an old theater, you know, in a sense. So you're really on a stage and the people are in the audience.
Mm-hmm.
But here at Segerstrom, certainly L.A. Disney Hall, all of those new halls, Philadelphia, you know, you're really in the hall.
You're part of it.
You know, you're part of it. You're experiencing it almost as they are. You know, rather than it's you and then it's them.
Yeah, it removes almost a boundary of separation.
Yeah.
And really, like you said, it makes you part of the experience.
Do you feel like sometimes it doesn't give you the acoustic shell that a stage does?
Not necessarily, because you definitely get something back when you just are singing in that big room. Again, you feel it kind of coming off of the walls around you and you hear the acoustic. And that's more important than if there's an arch or if there's
I
a shell
so
or if there's a, it's the feeling of the room. It's more important.
It's the feeling of the room. And having made music in great big cathedrals, sometimes you don't have that feel when you're at National Cathedral or when you're at the National Shrine of the Immaculate Conception. You make music, but the place is so cavernous that there's no sense of... Now, when you cut off, you hear this great echo. But when you're singing, when you're making the music, it doesn't have that intimate feel.
Right.
You know, sometimes you feel like you've got to scream. No one's going to hear this. And meanwhile, it just sounds glorious downstairs.
Right.
But so you did the Beethoven in the hall. And then what happened?
And then about a month later, I'm living in Memphis. And I had my whole family from Minneapolis in Memphis for Thanksgiving. And I get this phone call on Thanksgiving saying...
On Thanksgiving Day. Wow.
Saying, Carl just fired his soprano. You need to come to Costa Rica and sing Beethoven 9. And I'm like, what? I have a turkey in the oven. No, no, get on a plane, come to Costa Rica. I was like, no, you didn't hear me. I have a turkey in the oven. They're like, no.
I'm cook Mary Wilson.
Yeah, well, nobody wants that. Believe me. Should I say, Todd has a turkey in the oven.
Okay.
But he said, no, please come. And I said, well, no, I can't. The performance is tomorrow. I can't get there today. He goes,
but who could say no to Carl?
I know, right? We said, well, just get on a plane tomorrow, get off the plane and come do the show. And I went, okay. So I got on a plane Friday morning. I got off the plane. We talked for about 10 minutes. I put on my dress and we sang Beethoven 9 in Costa Rica.
Wow.
It was lovely. And again, to have that trust put in you from a conductor who you so admire is an amazing experience.
That is a great
gift. It's a really,
isn't it?
Yeah, it was an amazing gift that he called me. I'm thrilled. I'm still thrilled that he just said, no, get on a plane. Okay.
Well, and for those who don't know, Carl is also the music director of the Costa Rica.
National Symphony of Costa Rica.
There you go. All right, we got it. And who knew that? I didn't know that. That was a revelation. But the fact that he's calling you down there. And so right now you're here in town and you're doing the Mahler Second, the Resurrection Symphony of the great composer Mahler, Gustav Mahler. What's that like?
I tell you, again, where I get to sit, it's a completely emotional, physical, visceral experience. That's the only way I can describe it. I feel it in my feet radiating through my bones. And then that last page, when the whole choir is singing and the whole large orchestra, you'll see a large orchestra, full romantic orchestra, when they're all just playing at fortissimo and the choir is singing at fortissimo, and then he brings in the organ at fortissimo and the soloists. There is nothing like that. And it is, we will rise again. We will rise again. It is a defiant rail against everything that's hard and everything that's bad and everything that's questionable. And it is an experience I can't even put into words. It is something that you must hear live once.
Yes.
Recordings are amazing, but it doesn't give you that reaction.
The reaction of the live. We're certainly hoping to make that one of the pieces on our short list here at the cathedral. Those kind of pieces roaring through a cathedral, especially that has a big, you know, doing the Mahler Eighth is another one where the organ plays that intricate,
amazing
part. You know, the Mahler Eighth starts with that giant organ.
Big organ. Yeah.
You know, having done the Resurrection Symphony with the St. Louis Symphony a few years back, or many years back, it was thrilling even in that hall with an electronic organ.
Right.
So I can't imagine how thrilling it would be with a pipe organ. It's just one of the great moments. You know, you could list on 12, 14, 15 great moments in music.
Yeah.
And the end of the Mahler set is one of them.
No. And to have that full chorus in the symphony is still kind of naughty, revolutionary to have the chorus involved in the symphony.
Stolen from our buddy Beethoven.
Yeah, exactly.
But Mahler did it well. He did it very well. Well, Mary, this has just been such a treat. We hope that, and are you taking this one to Costa Rica as well?
We are in 2 weeks.
Oh my gosh, isn't that great? Well, so if you missed it here in Southern California, get yourself on a plane and get to Costa Rica. This is just been an absolute delight. I am so happy that you were able to make time amid rehearsals and performances and probably prepping for the next 12 gigs on top of it, that you were able to be here and be a guest on Music from the Tower. Mary, thank you so, so much.
It was a great pleasure. Thank you, John.
It's just great to have you. Thank you very much. All right, so before we leave everyone, Mary, tell us the last little bit of music that we're going to hear.
Sure. This is the Alleluia, the final movement from Handel's Si Lete Venti, also on the Mary Wilson Sings Handel CD.
We love Mary Wilson singing Handel. Thank you very much, Mary. And really, what a joy to have you on the show.
Thank you, John.
You have been listening to Music from the Tower. This is John Romeri wishing you a great week ahead. And until next time, go out and enjoy some live performances of some great music. Thanks for being with us. See you next time.